The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
We would like to welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM, Mr. Edie Stewart, who is going to be talking to us about the current situation with the Nurses Association and probably some comments on, you know, how this current situation here with this international body, how does that shine a light on the current situation? So good morning to you, Mr. Stewart. How are you? And welcome to Freedom 106.5 FM.
Pleasant morning. Thanks for having me. I trust you and your listeners are well.
Yes, we are well. So the topic for today, the nurses on the Eastern Midrand death toll at the hospital. I know this is in conjunction with what is currently happening with salary negotiations, work to rule, etc., with nurses. So let's get a handle on the entire situation. Let's start from the beginning. What has prompted nurses to go to strictly what's happening with contracts, meaning their stipulations for contracts? I believe it's, I think, six nurses to a ward or something like that. Can we start from there?
Well, sure. There are two different issues, really and truly. There's the issue with salaries, where all healthcare workers, not only nursing and military personnel, but all healthcare workers who are working within the regional health authorities continue to work on 2013 salaries. And what is worse, there is no acknowledgement or no confirmation as to when that would be addressed. There's no official correspondence coming from the Minister of Finance, the Minister of Health, nor the Prime Minister indicating when healthcare workers, including Mr. Military personnel, would receive a salary increase. We are one of the few remaining groups within Trinidad and Tobago in the public sector that still continues to work on 2013 salaries 13 years after the fact in 2026. So that's one. There's a second issue, which is, okay, we are working on 2013 salaries, and we are doing more than we ought to. We are doing the jobs of a number of other categories of staff, and we are being paid less, remunerated less. And this really and truly is not within our terms of employment. And it is something that we are seeking to address while we continue to be disadvantaged on these 2013 salaries. So one of the things we have sought to do is remind nursing and midwifery personnel, here what, you were trained to manage a particular number of patients. That is how you were trained. When you went through the 4 years of nursing school, you were trained for the most part to see about one registered nurse to four patients. That's the general on a medical surgical ward. And this indeed is the international standard. This is indeed the regional standard. One nurse will take care of four patients. What we sought, and there are other particular nuances, because there are other specialist areas like ICU where you would require a one-to-one, because those persons are high acuity and they would require more in-depth care from an individual nurse. So that's one-to-one high dependency unit. That's like the step-down unit from ICU. That's one registered nurse to two patients. So it varies from ward to ward. But the bulk of patients, probably 85% of all patients, would generally go to a medical surgical ward for normal issues. And the ratio is 1-4. So we were trained as registered nurses in our nursing schools over the 4 years to manage four patients. We were tested by our regulatory body, the Nursing Council of Trinidad and Tobago, at a ratio of one registered nurse to four patients. The international standard is one registered nurse to four patients. And there was a combined exercise undertaken, ironically, by the very Ministry of Health under the leadership of the National Administrator for Nursing Services, who saw to founded prudence. The only way you can deliver safe quality care towards patients is if you remain within a nurse to patient ratio. Once you go outside of that, you begin to compromise patient care. And with every additional patient that you add on to the nurse's workload, it means not only that additional patient care is compromised, but it means all the patients under that nurse care is also compromised. So it's not the one additional, but it's all five now patients are compromised. We indicated, look, over this next 2 months, we are going to implement the nurse-to-patient ratio, which the Minister of Health has failed to implement. So we will do it. And we are saying we're going to do it in a phased basis. We're going to start with 1 to 6. So we have gone, we are still going above what internationally is recommended and what nurses were taught. Mm-hmm. But we want to begin having that conversation and making sure persons are aware of what is the way forward. And then after 2 months, then we'll go strictly to the 1 to 4 patients. So yes, we are actually going above by 2, just to make sure there's no country in the world that would accept one registered nurse seeing about 6 patients.
So I just wanted to focus in as well to the current situation at the Eric Williams Medical Sciences Complex, which the association has released a comment on it, a statement on it. The association has been reliably informed that both the EWMSC and Mount Hope Women's Hospital are now at breaking point. Staff members and relatives of patients continue to provide real-time accounts exposing the true state of affairs within these institutions. And there's a mention of a pool rate. What is the pool rate? I see it's $75 in a desperate attempt to address the staffing crisis. Does this mean that the health authorities are now on emergency situation, negotiating these same salary increases, quote unquote, to manage this crisis that is happening right now? Oh no, I shouldn't use the word crisis. There isn't a health crisis.
well, definitely, and yes, it's definitely a crisis. The issue within the NCRHA facilities, inclusive of Eric Williams, Mount Hope Women's, and all other facilities under their management, they are woefully short-staffed. So it was quite unfortunate when Tim Gopi Singh, the chairman of NCRHA, came out in the public and on media and put out several press releases indicating that something untoward was happening within NCRHA institutions and nurses, personnel, and give the inference that there was some corruption about extra duty and overtime payments being made towards nursing personnel, when really and truly nothing could be further from the truth. What is happening? Because NCRHA is running with half the capacity of nursing and midwifery personnel, there is a mandatory need for nursing and midwifery personnel to work extra hours. NCRHA cannot operate without nearly every single nurse working additional hours, a minimum of 8 hours when the week comes. It cannot operate. It will fall down. So 2 months ago, when and obviously if you don't have enough staff and you are filling it with the extra duty, obviously extra duty will be high because you just don't have enough staff. It's just plain comments. So unfortunately, NCRHA chairman put out that information, and this is said, and one of the things you're after also, so simultaneously by putting that out, kind of defaming nursing and midwifery personnel in bulk, saying that we are corrupt and all of that nonsense, knowing full well he needs the extra duty, he simultaneously indicated, look, we're going to cut the extra duty rate from 75 down to 60. So imagine, we're already working on 2013 salaries, have not raised in the last decade. You are claiming that we are you're defaming nursing and midwifery personnel, and then on top of that, you cut the rate from 75 to 60, indicating that there's some CPO document where the CPO is saying for public servants, which we are not, we are state employees. Every RHA worker has a contract with the RHA. We don't come in to the government service like normal public servants do, through service commission and all of that. So we don't enjoy the benefits, and persons would have seen that when PSA negotiated for public servants, we did not get that remuneration, that 10% increase. So the CPO, who is responsible for the public service, would have put out a memo affecting public servants. However, the RHA found it prudent to reapply it to the NCRHA, and not realizing the whole context why it was increased, the extra duty that is, from 60 to 75 in the first place, under the last board and CEO back then. So he caught that extra duty, and he just said, well, fine, we're not going to do it. We're just not going to do the extra duty. And since then, it has gone into a spiral where, because there's no persons willing to work this extra duty, all the house of cards are falling apart. Mm. And that is why there's so much delays added to the delays that normally occurs within Eric Williams and Mount Hope. So now we have a situation where you don't even have, we put out a statement the other day where there was one midwife managing nine mothers, think about it, nine mothers who are in different stages of giving birth. So that means there are nine lines within those nine mothers. So you have 18.
But the thing is, some of the comments that are coming out of the situation as well, it's how can you treat patients this way? Family members of those patients asking questions about the quality of care, if it is that there is a standard ratio that nurses are supposed to be this amount as to one patient, why those stipulations are not being followed at this point in time. What does that mean for healthcare, patient care, as you mentioned? And what are the parameters or abilities that nurses have to, one, protect themselves and also make a stance on these circumstances and conditions, and still be not ostracized or targeted for standing up and making these scenarios known?
Well, it's a balancing act. But one of the areas we have reminded nursing and midwifery personnel, you can stand on evidence, you can stand on facts, you can stand on international standards. And if you were trained to see about four patients, if you were tested by your regulatory body to see about four patients, then, and if the association is telling you to see about six patients, then it is up to the employer to place in writing where did they get this notion that you can see about 10 patients or 12 patients or 20 patients. There's no maximum for the employer. They don't have, and they would not put it in writing because they know they would be totally rebuked if they put it in writing. So what they do, they go directly to the nurse and threaten the nurse with the nurse job, because a number of nursing personnel are still working on contracts. Mm-hmm. So they will go to the nurse, your contract would not be renewed if you try to implement these safe staffing levels. They go to them directly and threaten the nurses. And that is what we are facing, and that is what we are dealing with on an ongoing basis. Because they're not putting it in writing what you're asking the nurse to do, because they know that that is And I always remind
it may vary from shift to shift and depending on this current situation that they meet at the particular emergency hospital spaces. Now, I just want to, for balance sake, want to bring in the comment by the North Central Regional Health Authority. They have rejected the claims by the association suggesting that there are worsening patient outcomes at the Eric Williams Medical Sciences Complex and at the Mount Hope Women's Hospital. In a media release issued yesterday, the NCRHA has ongoing improvements in patient flow and service delivery showed measurable progress across the region, despite long-standing financial and operational challenges inherited from the previous administration. The response came 2 days after the TTNNA said the EWMSC and Mount Hope Women's Hospital were at breaking point. Now, what would we consider a breaking point, and why has it been allowed to reach such a term, breaking point? And are there any suggestions from the association as well as to how they can come to the table to discuss the better way forward? Because at the end of the day, it is citizens who are not who cannot afford private attention that comes to the public health system.
Well, unfortunately, we live in a society where we do not address the fundamental problems, and things are left to fester on an ongoing basis. So for instance, everything that we are speaking about here and everything that has said and discussed about the deficiencies within healthcare has been said repeatedly. And not only it has been said and articulated repeatedly by several persons, it has been documented in several commissions of inquiry. So the whole issue with nurse-to-patient ratio and not enough nurses, and that is the number one cause of poor healthcare in Trinidad and Tobago, not having enough nursing and personnel, because that trickles down to everything else. It has been recorded recently in the PAHO report with those deaths of the neonates in Port of Spain General Hospital. The number one factor that caused those deaths is the shortage of NICU nurses in that department. And if you go back to all commissions of inquiry, and there have been several, the Gladys Gufour report and the Welsh report, and go on and on, you constantly see the same issues popping up. So in addition to the shortage of nursing personnel, there's the next major issue. You need an independent body to evaluate both public and private healthcare institutions. Mm-hmm. And that independent body was already designed, already formulated, and the act is already presented. It was just to be, actually, Dr. Forkan, not my favorite person, but Dr. Forkan was the last Minister of Health to pilot that bill in Parliament during his tenure, around 2013. So, and unfortunately, it has lapsed since, and it has not come back. What's supposed to happen? You're supposed to have a health sector accreditation council, which will go in and evaluate these healthcare institutions, both public and private. Because private has their own challenges. They just do the necessary, pay the families, so it doesn't come out in the light. But obviously, in the public, it comes out in the light more often. So with the absence of that health sector accreditation bill and council, you'll have NCRHA putting out these very illogical press releases indicating that, yes, everything is well, everything is good. A fisherman will never say his fish is rotten. So the public could only expect for them to heap praises upon themselves, because there is no independent person. So even if the public want to dismiss the association and you being alarmist, the only other point where they're going to get information from is the NCRHA. And if obviously they cannot be unbiased. So the only regulatory body currently, really and truly, according to the laws and policies, the Ministry of Health. So the very Ministry of Health, with the Minister of Health, who appoints these boards. So it's really himself unto himself regulating himself. That is the only regulatory body currently. And we need that. Is see what's going on with the OPR and all of these housing and landmark TT. You see how there's an independent body who could come in and say no.
So you're suggesting that the for this particular scenario, an independent body should come on board to have the issues addressed. Can you list some of the solutions, because we have approximately 10 more minutes to go again, that you would put forward as the association president to alleviate the fears, first of all, of the public? Because it is a standard of care that is required by the nation, and also confidence in that that healthcare would be delivered, and they would not feel, you know, a bit untoward getting to the hospitals, you know, for their lives, because there's no other option for them.
Well, I cannot alleviate the fears of members of the public, because I share those same fears. I live within the catchment area of the NCRHA. My father, my mother, my children live in the catchment area of the NCRHA. So I am petrified if I or my family have to go into those institutions, because I know, I am told, I am called on a daily basis to give an update of what is transpiring in those institutions. So for me to alleviate the fears of the public when I share those very fears, it will be hypocritical. And I would tell the members of the public, there's a reason why a number of persons go to Eastern Regional Health Authority, even though they're living in the Northern region, because the Eastern Regional Health Authority provides better quality care, because they have a proper complement of nursing and midwifery personnel. It's directly related. There's a reason why in Tobago, they provide a better quality of care, and the patients are not... you don't hear persons from Tobago complaining that much, because they have a better complement of nursing and midwifery personnel. But once you go to the three larger regional authorities, with NCRHA being the worst, well, definitely the fears are fully well justified. And I would have demonstrated in our Facebook post. You have a situation, for instance, we compared all of the RHAs in Trinidad currently, ERHA, Southwest, and NCRHA. All of those RHAs, the average capacity, bed capacity, is about 22, 23, 24 beds. So the max it could hold is around 23, 24 patients. How many nurses are assigned to a normal medical ward that holding 23 patients? How many persons are on the roster? How many registered nurses? In Eastern, you have 22 nursing personnel, 22 registered nurses assigned to a medical ward to see about the same 23 patients. So 22 nurses spread across a month shift to see about these 23 possible patients. And so you have 19 to see about these 23 patients. In NCRHA, you have 11. You have 11. So that means where you would have 3 and 4 nurses on a ship in Eastern and in South to take care of those 23 patients, in NCRHA facilities, you would have 1. For the most, 2 nurses seeing about 22. Nowhere on the earth, I challenge anyone who is hearing me to go on any site, any website, any Google, ChatGPT, anything, and find where it is acceptable for 1 or 2 nurses to see about 23 patients. You will not see it.
I mean, in the teaching association as well, it's mind-boggling to hear the number you call 60-something students to however many teachers, and that has also been a scenario that they've been asking for some sort of relief on. Now, that comes to one of the quick questions that I want you to clarify for me as well. There was a question about qualifications, accreditation, and so on when training nurses. And there have been a lot of specialty positions that seem to have a problem to be filled. Any solutions or suggestions on how that can happen? What is the status with that?
Well, the Ministry of Tertiary Education just needs to get to work. They are dormant right now. You have a situation in Trinidad and Tobago where there is not a single nursing school. There are three nursing schools currently, and none of them are training specialty nurses, not a single one. So you only have psychiatric nurses being trained, and also general nurses being trained. So you have no oncology nurses, no theater nurses, ICU, dialysis. You don't have any being trained right now. The last school that was doing it was actually operating illegally, which was the Ministry of Education Nursing School. So it was operating, they were breaking the laws of the government was breaking their own laws in terms of for you to be a tertiary educational facility, you need to be registered with the Accreditation Council of Trinidad and Tobago to offer tertiary level or post-secondary training. And that school was not registered and could not have been registered because obviously a ministry, a department within a ministry can never be registered because it will never meet the basic requirements of a tertiary level school. So that school was closed down about 2 years ago because, and I will tell you, the very nursing association would, after about 10 years of lobbying the government to transfer those courses that were being delivered by the Ministry of Education Nursing School over to UTT or one of the other nursing schools, COSTAT, UE, USC, the government just paid lip service to us, so we actually took them to court because it was being used. Because obviously, once the institution is not accredited, the most you can offer to that individual coming out of that program is a certificate. And the government has been using that to suppress nursing salaries by saying, look, some persons might have a degree, yes, and they may be justified to get a salary consummate with a degree qualification. But there are other persons who still come out with certificates. So that was one of the justifications why the government continued to suppress salaries and why nursing and midwifery personnel continue to remain on technician salaries, while all our colleagues of the islands and internationally get professional salaries going forward. So we took action, and indeed the courts agreed with us. And in a haste, Dr. Nan Gatsby-Dolly, instead of doing what we were lobbying them to do over the years, just closed down the program and transferred the program over to COSTAT. But unfortunately, COSTAT, after 2 years, have failed to run one of any of these courses to date, not even in nursing assistants. So we also short on nursing assistants in addition to specialty nursing programs. So we're in a real bind, and it's really only Professor Prakash Prasad, the tertiary education minister, needs to get to work and get these courses off the ground. Otherwise, it's all of us. It is not in my best interest to continue to have this situation perpetuate continuously.
Let's say three major points that you want to leave with us definitely is to come to the table to renegotiate or revisit the salaries of nurses and nursing staff, and also to take a look at their accreditation, what persons are studying and their qualifications to meet those standard salary points. And also the third one would be, if I got it correctly, is to manage the nurse to patient ratio to make it easier for the efficiency of the running of the hospitals. Yes?
Well, I think the major takeaway would be the implementation of the Health Sector Accreditation Council and bringing that bill to Parliament. That would, once that body is instituted, which I would also say the current UNC government had it in their manifesto, because it's something that we would have lobbied Dr. Lakram Bodo when he was in opposition to make sure happens. So health sector accreditation, and that will alleviate the fears of all the citizens in Trinidad and Tobago who goes to public and private healthcare institutions, because that body will force those institutions to operate at proper nurse-to-patient ratios, make sure they have the correct quality staff and staff are appropriately trained. So that body is key on that aspect. But with regards to the salary issue, all that needs to happen is for the government to implement the 10% increase that they gave to public servants applied to regional health authority workers. And those two things would alleviate a number of issues, currently the main issues within the healthcare sector in Trinidad and Tobago currently.
All right, Mr. E.G. Stewart, thank you so much for taking the time to come out and speak to us on the issues of the nursing situation. And let's hope that we actually, you know, work through and find at least a working ground to get to the next point where, you know, both patients and nurses can find, you know, solutions to the situation. Thank you so much for joining me.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.